irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
All right, Wake Up Hollywood. This is your host with the most, Nikki Kourula, and Eddie Pence is out. I think he's doing a show tonight. So, anyways, we're going to jump right into our interview. I think our wonderful guest has arrived. Say hello to Mickey Madden. Say hello, Mickey.
Hello, Nikki.
Hey, our studio audience loves you already. We keep them hidden. We bring them out only when we want to.
I didn't see anything.
Nothing. But when you want them, there they are. There they are.
Thank you, Mickey, so much.
You and I have known each other for 15 years.
15 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
I don't have many friends that I've known that long that I want to keep around. I'm just kidding. So, you know what?
I get it.
Let's start way back, before we even met. Tell me, what was the moment of zen that made you want to be a musician? What was that? Did you hear a song in the house? What made you pick up a guitar? Did you hear a band? A friend showed you some music? What was that first moment you were like, I want to do this?
You know, my parents, my aunts and uncles used to listen to the Beatles all the time.
That's a good one to start.
So I saw A Hard Day's Night, and I used to watch the Monkees.
Oh, yeah.
You know, on Channel 48 back in Philadelphia, and you know, it was a band, four guys that just had no parental supervision, that were just living on the beach and were just rocking out all the time. And I thought, that sounds fun.
Whatever that is,
yeah,
that's it.
I want to do that.
Yeah.
And it was obvious that it was in California.
Because there was a lot of sun.
A lot of sun. And they were on the beach all the time.
Yep.
You know, I just feel like taking a walk. Okay, right after band rehearsal, I'm just going to walk downstairs and go to the beach.
You're like, I wish LA was always like that.
Yeah.
I used to watch that show all the time.
Oh.
And I used to love it. It's like, I the Monkees were one of those bands where it was like, I feel like they were very underrated because they were kind of played on as like a spoof of the Beatles, essentially.
Right.
But they were great. They were a great band.
They were.
They were killer.
They really were. I mean, you know, they were four starving boys just living in LA, just looking for a gig.
Right.
And they landed the gig. And, you know, the music was made before they even, you know, were cast. And, but, I mean, you can't say those four didn't work hard.
Yeah. You know? And then, you know what? They had a sound.
They did.
And they had a very English sound, but it actually had, like, some brightness to it just because they were in L.A. doing the TV show, too, you know?
Oh, yeah. And then Nesmith was a pioneer in the country rock kind of genre.
Oh, I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I met Peter, oddly enough, where you and I met at Guitar Center when I was working there.
Great guy.
And he was the first celebrity I met at Guitar Center. And I was like, dude, you're one of the Monkees. He's like, yeah, that's how people know me. You know,
yeah.
He was just like, cool.
Very nice guy.
Very nice guy.
I met him and, I never met Nesmith. I met him and Dolan's. Unfortunately, I never got to meet Davy Jones.
Yeah, he was the one that was the most famous.
Yeah.
And he was the voice, you know. So the Beatles, you watched A Hard Day's Night.
Mm-hmm.
Was that your first impression of the Beatles?
Yeah.
Or did you hear their music first?
So that was my introduction to their personalities. But I heard, I mean, the music was ubiquitous all over Philadelphia and the East Coast. You know, you couldn't turn on the radio. I mean, you couldn't be in the car as a kid when I grew up, you know, with your parents and have them turn on the radio. And I mean, the first thing you would hear would be the Beatles or the Stones. And so that classic rock thing, I thought, yeah.
Who was your favorite Beatle? I always ask this to Beatles fans because it's so hard to choose.
Yeah. So it was Lennon, but then it, in the most recent, I mean, in the last few years, it became Harrison.
Yeah.
He was just cool.
So underrated, too, man. Another. He didn't get any of the notoriety, but he was one of the most musical of all of them.
He was probably the most musically educated of all of them. I mean, he sought the musical education, but he, God, he just worked for good causes and he wanted good things for people, you know. Man, the concert for Bangladesh, you know, what a selfless thing.
He is like one of those guys that he really sought enlightenment on a whole different level.
Yeah.
And the music was like a part, a second nature part of it. You know what I mean? It was never like the main enchilada for him.
Yeah, and that was my attraction to his music, post-Beatles.
Right.
You know, All Things Must Pass.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole, that album, that three-record album. Wow. What a, I mean, what an artistic accomplishment.
See, I went from Paul McCartney, then to John Lennon, then to George Harrison, then back to Paul McCartney, because Paul McCartney wrote so many of the killer songs, back to George Harrison.
Yeah,
Ringo was, and then the funny thing is, like, I always thought Ringo was just lucky to be there, but he was actually one of the most polished drummers, you know, to join the Beatles. You know,
I think he has one of the most, I mean, the greatest backbeat in all of, you know, in the history of recorded music.
Yeah, and he came up with great parts.
Yeah.
Now, being in a band myself, and I'm sure you are the same, I really appreciate parts. I think it's so hard to come up with a great drum line or a great bass line or a great guitar line. You know?
Something that's really unique. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we all borrow, but
good composers borrow, great composers steal is the quote from Stravinsky.
Yeah.
So you started with guitar. How old were you when you started with guitar?
About 8 or 9, actually maybe 7. I strummed my grandfather's tenor banjo left-handed.
Wow, that's a crazy instrument to start on.
Yeah, and it felt natural to me, and so I was playing upside down and backwards.
Wow,
and when I went for guitar lessons, I wanted to play left-handed, and the instructor said, "No, you're gonna walk into a guitar shop, you're gonna see a million right-handed guitars." And 3 left-handed guitars. You know?
That's the best thing he ever probably told you.
And so I still can't play left-handed to this day.
Wow.
I mean, even though it's still kind of...
like you think it's your thing.
Yeah.
But that's awesome that he gave you that guidance.
Yeah.
Because now you can walk in any guitar shop and pick up anything.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, okay, did you start your first band in high school? Like, how did you get the bug to want to play with others?
I played with my cousin, Charles, from the time I was about 13, or 12, 13. He played drums, I played guitar, then we'd switch off, and he was a very talented drummer, and now he's a very talented guitar player, keyboardist. I mean, he's just one of those guys that can play anything.
Natural.
Yeah.
Those guys scare me.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't play drums very well. I started off, you know, like kind of playing drums. I wanted to be a great drummer to put down drum tracks, and I wanted to play guitar along. So actually, let me start backwards a little bit.
That's all right.
I started playing guitar because I wanted to play like killer drums to the guitar tracks, and I wound up becoming a really crappy drummer and an all right guitarist.
A drummer is that's the hardest one.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to play drums.
Yeah.
I can hear drums, I can tell a drummer give me this on the backbeat, but if I sit at a kit, I just can't do it.
Yeah.
And it's actually something that right now, like, I'm going to be 40 in December, I'm like, I want to learn to play drums. I want to just learn to know the bag and just to know what it feels like to feel rhythm on that level, because I feel it in every other instrument.
Mm-hmm.
But drums are the hardest. So I'm sure you were like, I'm going to give up on the drums and just go with this guitar thing.
The guitar and the bass.
Yeah, so when did you start picking up bass? Because you're a fantastic bass player. I've heard you play bass and guitar.
Thank you.
But I love your bass playing. It's bass is the most important instrument to me. So whenever I hear somebody play bass well, I'm like, ooh, that's awesome.
Oh, thanks, man. I guess I was about 15. There were a whole lot of guitar players in my neighborhood.
Right.
and very few bass players. You know, basses were, you could walk into any guitar shop and find many, many guitars, acoustic guitars, electric guitars, but not many basses. Right. And not many people were interested in playing bass. So you were lucky to find a bass player. Like when I was in high school, I knew two guys who played bass, one girl who played bass. And so when they would hand me the bass, you know, I just felt a whole lot of power when I would use a pick originally. And I would just really feel it and say, oh, wow, I really want to play this. And then people would say, oh, no, you're too good of a guitar player, man. Stick to guitar.
And you're like, no, so I want to play some bass.
Yeah, so I would you know, I would kind of sneak off, you know, with our bass player's bass. And, you know, after, a few minutes, you'd be like, okay, man, give that back to me. Yeah. I need my bass.
What's awesome about bass, too, because I've just been playing, you know, on little recordings here and there, it's you have to know the chords. You have to know the inversions. You control how the chords sound in so many ways. Because if you start a chord on the third or the fifth or the seventh or, the sixth or whatever it is, it changes the whole chord.
Oh, yeah. And wasn't, like, Brian Wilson and Paul McCartney, weren't they the best?
They were the best. They were the best. Also, great part. Art writers, also great chord enthusiasts, because they would think about how to make something sound cool and different and give it personality. You know what I mean?
It's all about the chords, and the harmonies.
This is why I like you. This is why I like you, Mickey.
Yeah, man.
This is, we've been talking like this for 15 years, man.
15 years.
15 years strong. So, okay, you start playing with your cousin. Mm-hmm. You start playing with the neighborhood kids. Mm-hmm. Then, when did you start taking it to... Did you ever start a band with any of the neighborhood kids or your cousin? Or was it just like jamming? Everybody was jamming around.
Some neighborhood kids at my senior year of high school. And that continued. And in 1995, it really seemed like Philadelphia, where I grew up, it really seemed like the Philly scene was going to explode.
Hmm.
And there were a lot of great bands and great musicians, and we were all hanging out and supporting each other, but nothing really happened. It wasn't a Seattle, you know. And then I met a few musicians in Philly who said, you should move to L.A., because there were some very, very serious musicians in L.A. that really want to do it. And so I moved out here in about 2000.
Wow. Just packed up your bags and did you drive? Did you fly?
I flew.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what did you bring with you? I always think that's a daunting move because I just came from Pasadena. So it's like, that's only half an hour away. Yeah. When people like pack their bag and they
3,000 miles away.
Yeah, I'm always thinking, what the hell would I bring?
Yeah.
That's just like a suitcase and maybe a backpack, you know?
Yeah, I brought a Telecaster and
smart man.
Yeah. And underwear.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then you came here.
Oh, and a t-shirt, yeah.
One t-shirt. Yeah. I like it. No Tarzan suit. Mm. So you came here with a Telecaster and a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Yeah.
How did you meet the first guys you started playing with?
You know, I was wandering around L.A. I went to Venice Beach, took the buses, and just, I really, this might sound weird, but I wanted to get lost in L.A. I just wanted to discover L.A., and I wound up in Los Feliz on Vermont Avenue, and I walked into a diner called Fred 62.
I know that place well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And met a kid named Corey, and we started a band called Critter Jones.
I remember that band.
Yeah. We got signed to Warner Brothers back in 2000.
I thought you were signed to Maverick. Weren't you signed to Maverick?
Oh, Maverick, yeah. And Warner Brothers was the parent company.
Okay.
And then Maverick folded, and we were like brought up into the Warner Brothers umbrella.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, but they never put the record out.
So, okay, so let me ask you this, because this is part of the story that I don't even think I've ever asked you the details of this. So you meet this guy, you start a band. Mm-hmm. He already knew the friends that were, you know, that would make the rest of the band?
Yeah, they were all like Glendale, you know, Hollywood natives. And
I think you said two of them were brothers, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Corey and his brother Jesse. And we started this band, Critter Jones, and we started that with two high school friends of theirs. And I think the drummer was in the band for maybe 6 weeks or something.
Wow, really? Was it like a group songwriting thing, arrangements? How did you kind of
The brothers wrote a lot of songs, and we learned them. We played I think, like five songs for the showcase at the Viper Room in Gaio Syria offered us a deal on the spot.
That's crazy.
And so we went with it, and it was a great journey.
So you
and a great learning experience.
You played five songs for him. Was it just a showcase for him, or were there other industry people there?
It was all for Maverick, and I think we played the first song, and we were halfway through the second song, and I heard that he said to Ellen Mintz, our lawyer, "I want the deal done by tomorrow at noon on my desk."
Really?
Yeah.
That must have been so exciting. Wait,
yeah.
Let's back up. There are a lot of musicians that are, listening in. So you start this band. Were you gigging around town? Were you playing like the Sunset Strip? Were you playing around? Or was it just very strategic? You wanted to get songs, arrangements, performance, and then have somebody kind of shop you guys to managers and labels?
Yeah, the latter.
Okay.
We were more concerned about getting the arrangements tight.
Right.
And we wanted the songwriting to be good. And probably we would have done well to have played out more. You know, the songs would have,
taken on a life a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, we were at it. We were, three of us would be at the piano together, just tightening the arrangements.
That's awesome.
And then we'd say, okay, let's break and let's, pick up our instruments and play it, at the rehearsal with everybody on their individual instruments.
So you're sitting at the showcase, you're playing the song. When did your lawyer come up to you and tell you, guys, we're going to have a deal?
Go Siri. Called us over to a booth at the Viper Room. He said, let's talk. And he said, you guys have a very organic sound. And Maverick is all about, an organic kind of growth. And he said, you guys are young. You do need to grow. And we're going to facilitate that if you go with us.
And everybody was like, cool.
Yeah, we asked him some questions, and
what did you ask? These are good. This is a good. This, yeah. I've never known this part of this story at all.
Yeah. So, Jesse, the youngest member of the band, said, "So, what can Maverick do for Critter Jones?"
Right.
And Osiri was up to the challenge, and he said, "Well, we can give you the wherewithal to grow."
And yeah, that's a good answer.
And they did. They gave us an advance. We got it within 5 months or something. And, we just went at it. We rehearsed constantly. And
did you buy, recording gear? Were you kind of in that place where...
Yeah, we, for the first time, I could walk into Guitar Center and say, oh, how much is that telly? Oh, it's this much. Okay.
Wow.
I didn't
That's
ask.
And That's a great feeling.
I wish I'd said, oh, can I? I wish I'd asked for the pro deal. But, yeah.
But, in that time, it's essentially, it is your money.
Yeah.
But it really isn't your money, and it is your money at the same time. You know what I mean? So it's like, you don't realize then that it really is your money.
Yeah.
But when you walk in, it's in that mindset, it's not your money. It's a very different process. You know what I mean?
And you're not thinking about that. You're saying, what a candy store. Oh,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you guys get into a studio together? Did you have a producer? Did you make a record? I know you made a record.
Yeah. We worked with Christopher Thorne and Brad Smith from Blind Melon. And I think we started in October of 2001. And we worked until about the end of December. And
then the record never came out.
No, the record never came out. It was a really strange time for the music biz. Everybody was kind of scared.
It was starting to collapse.
Yeah, people were sharing files, and after a while, the label folded, and we were free to do whatever we wanted.
How did that conversation go down? Because that's kind of the opposite of how you guys got signed. You know what I mean? Like, you got signed, and you're elated.
Yeah.
You're in this like, oh my goodness, it's happening.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they pop the balloon and say, guys, we're going to let you out of your contract and we're not going to did they tell you they're not going to release the record?
It was always kind of like hanging over our head. Yeah, it's, give us a reason to put the record out, play more shows, do this and that. And we were playing the game. And then our A&R guy was replaced by a new guy, and he called one of our band members and said, "Okay, yeah, the things are not going well for the music biz, and we're going to let you guys go, and we don't even know what's going to happen to us."
Wow,
yeah,
that's the phone call that you don't want to get. Now, how did the band react in that? Because that tests a band, especially a young band.
Yeah,
that tests a band. You know, it tests your friendship. It tests your desire to stay in the industry. You know what I mean? Because you were given this opportunity to work in this capacity, and you're doing it, and then you didn't even get a proper shot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, how did that test you guys?
Yeah, it was very dispiriting. And after a while, we weren't sure what to do, so everybody went their separate ways. And we all stayed friends. We all still call each other. And, there are two brothers in the band. I'm married to their sister. I still am.
That's awesome.
Happily married. And, I went back to school. I learned a lot more about music and music theory. And, now I'm back in the music. I play lead guitar for Charlie Overby and the Broken Arrows.
Yeah, this is the happy ending on the story. This is what we're about to play some music. But you went through such a trench with just like you lived the dream, and then the dream got taken out under your feet.
Yeah.
And that is like something that not very many people even get that far in this industry.
Yeah.
So the fact that you even got that is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But the triumphant part of your story is, and we're going to get to more of this in a second, but you recently just played Cal Jam,
mm-hmm.
Dave Grohl's Music Festival, with Charlie Overbay and the Broken Arrows, and you just played the Kaboo Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to play something first, but I want to just talk to you after we play this next song, you know, how you got to that place to get to that triumphant place, because that is, I think, the hardest part of dealing with some of those obstacles that you were dealing with, is how do you respond and mm-hmm. react, you know? So what are we going to play first? What do you want to play?
Let's see. Let's do Greenwich Village Prayer.
All right. And who's it by? Is it Charlie Overbay?
Oh, no. Actually, this is Wolfhound.
Okay.
This is my own production company.
Awesome. So we're going to ask you questions about that. Here's Greenwich Village Prayer.
Thank you.
What a dreamy, beautiful song,
oh,
man. What are you playing on that?
I'm playing the upright bass and the rhythm guitar. I played some 12-string acoustic. And my buddy Eric Wolf, he was playing the drums and the lead guitar, some rhythm guitar. And then we had various friends come in and fill it out.
What I love is, like, you're such a Renaissance man. And it's like, what I also love is I can hear all your influences are very 60s, classic rock, 70s, folk. Like, you love all the same genres of music that I love. So when you do and you take an approach, you know how to, like, make it musical. You don't waste notes. You don't waste, you know, space. You give it air to breathe. You just hear it in the song. It's like from the production to the mix to the vibe to the sounds. The textures, they're all there, man.
Thanks, man.
That attention to detail is rare.
Yeah, and I got to thank Eric Wolf, my buddy, who we write songs together. And if I come in with a song that I've written on my own, or if he comes in with a song that he's written on his own, we're very honest with each other. And, you know, we'll say, oh, I like it. And if we start going, one of us starts going in the wrong direction with it, one of us will say, no. Stop. Let's keep
that's good to have that.
Yeah.
And trust each other.
Yeah.
Trust.
Yeah. No, it's never mean or anything. It's just more like, I like what you're doing. And, you know, I want it to be the best it possibly can be.
Yeah.
And, that's what I love about Eric. And he likes that about me. And we're just keeping it going. It's a wonderful, wonderful.
So is this production cycle. Team just the two of you? And you obviously bring in other people, but you guys basically you utilize it like a band.
Yeah. Yeah. Before I go forward with something, I always ask him, like, is there a vibe here? Is this worth working on? Most of the time he says, yeah. He's super talented. He comes in with these amazing songs, you know. He comes in with the words, lyrics, the melody, the chords.
And how did you meet Eric?
I was wandering around Venice Beach.
That seems to be your place, man.
Yeah, but I was just playing a mandolin. And he was hanging out with his wife on a boardwalk bar, at a boardwalk bar. And I was walking past him, and both of them shouted out, hey, play something. And so I played him an Irish jig, and I played him some bluegrass stuff, and then they said the magic words, sit down and have a beer.
And you're like, okay.
All right. So we sat down and we exchanged numbers, and we've been hanging out ever since.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And he's a songwriter, I see.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it's rare. This is what I love about LA, too. It's like there's so many artists in this great city. And it's rare that a lot of them get to meet each other. Even with all the technology that we have, I find there's like a serendipitous factor that you just have to be open to. And you're very much like that. You've always been like that. That's why you and I are friends.
Yeah, you and me and Eric.
Total serendipity. You know what I mean? And it's like, you've always been open to it. But a lot of people that come here, there's too much ego involved with the process.
Unfortunately.
And so that partnership never gets that creative, you know, those creative juices flowing in the right directions, you know? So that's amazing. And so did you guys just start writing recently together, or were you writing for years together?
You know, it happened very naturally. I called him once, and he invited me to his place, and his wife is just amazing. She just facilitated a nice evening for us to jam. I get the acoustics out, and he played me his first song, and you have it. It's called Rivertown. I said, what an amazing song. And I just started I picked up a mandolin. I said, what if I did this on that? And it just grew and grew and grew, and it became this living, breathing thing.
That's awesome. You know what? Let's play it. Should we play it?
Let's play Rivertown, yeah.
All right. This is Wolfhound. This is your production company. This is Rivertown.
Whiskey is water, like water is wine. I keep you on, keep you off of my mind. And if I stay lucky and lucky stay sweet, you knock me off of my feet. So now, take me down to that old real town where I can be.
What a killer arrangement.
Oh, thank you.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, that was...
Who's playing fiddle on that?
It's a friend of ours, Jesse Olima, who's another fantastic L.A. multi-instrumentalist, plays guitar, he sings, but his fiddle playing is just...
Yeah, it was such
incredible.
A great part and solo at the end.
And that's one take.
What?
One take.
Really?
Yeah, he just soloed along with the, you know.
I love when musicians just have that feel. You got that feel, Mickey. It's like you play all the right notes.
Oh, thank
you. And you listen. Like, if I get into a room and, you know, sometimes if you get into a room with musicians and you are jamming or you're playing with people and they're not listening, it affects, like, no matter what you're playing, it affects the whole thing.
So I feel
like you can only move as far as who's listening the least. That's as far as you can ever go. But if everybody in the room is, like, listening and making something count, all of a sudden it has this vibe, you know, and this energy, you know what I mean?
It's a weight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I agree.
Man, that sounded beautiful. Had air, too, the same thing. Arrangement's great. And that's Eric singing as well?
That's Eric singing, yeah. I played the upright bass and the mandola, which is
it's a Greek instrument, right?
This was an Irish instrument. Well, I mean, I don't think it's Irish in origin, but it was made in Ireland. Trinity mandola. It's just a fifth down from the mandolin. That was the solo there, but Eric.
How did
played,
you learn to play all these instruments? Just tinkering?
I don't know,
dude. That's insane.
My wife asked me the same thing.
Like if you handed me a mandola, I'd be like, what is this?
Yeah. You know, I just have fun with it, and then it just clicks. But
how many instruments
do
you play total?
I don't know.
Well, let's list them. I know you play banjo.
Play banjo, mandolin, tenor banjo.
Okay, guitar, bass, mandola.
Mandolin, and I play Beatles piano.
Yeah, that counts. You play drums?
Ringo. Again, Beatles drums. And what else have I messed with? I play the fiddle, not like Jesse Olima.
Right.
I wish.
But
I could.
The language enough.
Yeah.
See, some of those instruments I can't even mess around with. I just don't have the technique in it or the patience to be bad at it. You know what I mean? Because that's how you have to start. You know, there's certain instruments where it's like, okay, this is, you have to either have the patience to just tinker with it enough to get decent, or you just know you don't have the patience for it, you know?
I get frustrated with myself sometimes, and Eric has seen it. Okay, I'm going to go over there now, and, you know, you do your thing.
That's part of it, dude.
Yeah.
That's, you know, every musician I find is like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, so... You've gone through this kind of... Let's talk a little bit about this response to, you know, Critter Jones, when you lost the record deal, that was, what, 10, 15 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
So you've been going through... And I think you and I ran into each other when you were playing a gig somewhere.
Yeah.
In a hotel lobby. And I was like, dude, Mickey, you sounded awesome. I was like, man, that was... incredible bass player. I didn't even know you played upright. You're like, yeah, man, I've been just like, you know, gigging. I feel like that period is when you really grew... as a musician.
I did. It was all about the chords and the notes and how they all fit together right around that time. And it's really all about harmony. Chords are harmonies. Are they examples of harmonies?
But you think about it like you don't... Like the funny thing is you play great wicked guitar and you don't think about music like a guitar player. That's what I love. You think about it like a musician.
How it all fits together.
Yes.
That's what it's all about.
It's like that I love. That is something you and I connect on very deeply. Our passion for that. The arrangement and how it all works together. The sum of its parts. You know? So now fast forward to what was it like playing Cal Jam with Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters and, you know, you're playing with Charlie Overbay. And it's in this style of music that's very rock and roll. It's got a roots sound, very Tom Petty influence.
Oh, very. Waylon Jennings and Willie Nelson. Well, Charlie's fantastic. I mean, he's just one of those guys that he'll hit a few chords, and then he's got this fantastic ditty.
Right.
That'll play for you. And he's got the words, the melody, the chord progression. How did you do that?
And it's ease. The ease of it.
He does it so, yeah. And he's just a fountain of music, of catchy songs. And he's got one after another. And it's hard to keep up with him. And it's fun to keep up with him. But, So, yeah, Charlie got the call that I guess the Foo Fighters management wanted us to play Cal Jam. Do you guys want to play? Charlie said yes.
And this is after your performance at Caboo, right?
At Caboo, yeah.
Yeah, and they were the headliner? They were the headliner,
yeah. And we were, at Caboo, we were backstage watching the Foo Fighters just rock out. And Grohl was just tearing it up on the guitar and on vocals. And then they took a little tiny break. And Taylor Hawkins came out and sang Under Pressure. Yeah, the Queen song.
Yeah, of course.
And Grohl went, behind the kit, and he just,
he's such a bitchin' drummer.
Yeah, his musicianship is...
I love his drumming.
Solid.
So much.
Solid. Yep. And it's different from... I mean, Taylor Hawkins is a fantastic drummer also, but Grohl has his own style. It's very Bonham-esque, yes. But he also has his own thing going
on.
It's
raw. That's what I like about it.
It was raw, and it was intense, and everybody felt it. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Insane. So that's one of those moments, like, here you are playing a music festival, backstage, watching the Foo Fighters. I know that feeling from, playing festivals myself. And that had to be the moment of, I'm here. This is what it's all about.
Yeah.
Because festivals have that feeling. It's like, that's what I want to do, is just play festivals because of that feeling that you get. You're like, oh, this is what it is. This is exactly what I've been working hard on music for these moments. And they go by so fast.
Yeah.
But was that rush for you? You played Caboo and Cal Jam within maybe a week or two apart, right?
A few weeks apart. And we played our set. I mean, it was so much fun just showing up, and the crew was so fantastic, and they were just warm and friendly, and they got our stuff up, and we played our set, and it just seemed to go by so quickly.
Yeah, they always do.
we just wanted to play more. We have more songs to play. We have, so much to share, but it went by really quickly. And then when we walked off the stage, there were the Foo Fighters.
Wow.
All of them. Hey, great set, man. And so the first person I saw was Dave Grohl, and he said, hey, you having a good time? Yeah, I'm having a great time. Sounded okay out there? Yeah, it sounded fantastic. Oh, great. We got a little photo together.
I love that photo, by the way. It's killer.
Oh, thank you. And what a nice guy.
Yeah.
What really...
ironically, I met him at Guitar Center and sold him a guitar.
Oh.
And we talked music, and I was like, this guy is the real deal.
Yeah.
He's such a mensch, you know?
I met him a few times before, just at gigs, Critter Jones gigs. One of his buddies opened up for Critter Jones, and he was in the audience, in a normal section of the audience. And I said hello to him, and he was just like the most normal guy you could meet. He was one of the biggest rock stars in the world at the time. But, hey, great to meet you.
It's incredible. So let me ask you this, Mickey. Where can people find you if they want to have your production company work on music? Do you have a website, URL, anything like that?
We're working on our website right now. I can get that to you.
Yeah. Or what's it like? Do you have, if people want to YouTube you to find out, stuff you're doing, do you have a Instagram or anything like that?
Mickey Madden on Instagram, Mickey-Madden.
Spell it out for people, because people are dumb.
Okay. Mickey. Oh, this is going in a bad place. Mickey-Madden. And you'll find mostly Charlie Overby and the Broken Arrows. The Wolfhound production, the website is under construction, so I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah, no problem. I always want to give our listeners the opportunity to find you. And tell us a little bit about this next song, I Do.
I Do is written by Eric Wolfe, a great catchy song. I think that might have been the second or third one that we ever jammed on, and we said, well, we got to do this one. So this is Eric on vocals, guitar. I'm not sure if I played mandolin on this one. He played the drums, and I think I only played the upright bass. Again, this is Jesse Olima on the fiddle.
All right, here comes I Do. Oops. We'll be right back.
say. So my fears, they melt away. Take me home. Mama, just take me home. Cause I love you more than Tennessee whiskey. Will you say I do? If I don't, I'm gonna live my life a gypsy on the dark side of the moon. Gonna dive into the deep water. Hopefully have someone in the door. Just tell me I do what I promise to be true. Say I do. Tennessee whiskey. Will you say I do? Make you kiss me. If I don't, I'm gonna live my life a gypsy on the dark side of the moon. We'll hold hands at the end of the journey. Looking back at life that is worthy.
Mickey Madden, you are, first of all, your name is awesome.
Thank you.
You just have a rock star name, dude. Now you know.
Yeah, thank you, parents.
You know what? Honestly, I love hearing what's going on with your production team. I love knowing that you're playing the festival circuit. You're doing all this stuff. You've gone through adversity. It's made you a humble person. Not that you weren't before. You've always been a gracious and humble person. But you know what? It's like you've stood the test of time. And now you're going to start reaping all the rewards, because I'm seeing it. I'm seeing you do it. And it's really inspiring, man. Your story is super inspiring. You could have been given all of these things early on in your career, and you may have not. You may have taken it for granted. But now you are savoring these special moments. And I just look forward to you coming back and telling us more about what you're doing. You and I are going to collaborate on music. I'm saying it on the air so all the listeners know there's going to be a collaboration.
Hell yeah.
Because it's meant to be. But, yeah, man, you've been such an amazing guest, and what an incredible story. I think there's so many. I could have a 10-hour interview with you and just keep asking you more questions about your life in music, because it is fascinating to me, and I don't say that very often, you know?
Thank you, but friends like you are just very inspiring.
Look at this.
Yeah. You know, keeps me going.
Well, and I look forward to seeing more successes, and we're going to have you back. Just putting that out there, too. And
I can't wait.
And next time, Eddie will be here. But on behalf of Eddie and myself, we're going to have to sign off right now, and we'll see you guys next week. Thank you, Mickey Madden. Big shout out. Yeah.
Thank you, Nikki.